Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Early Work. This is the podcast in which I, Rhys James, a comedian, invite a guest from the world of comedy or music or broadcasting or a writer or someone from the arts or entertainment to perform some of the creative writing from their adolescence. Very embarrassing stuff that they're hopefully ashamed of, whether it's poetry or song lyrics, maybe short stories, plays, fan fiction, anything, as long as it's creative, to finally give it the public airing their younger self would have wanted when they wrote it, but hopefully their older self does not. On this episode, we have the incredibly talented Edinburgh Comedy Award winning, which is just about the most prestigious award in comedy in Britain, brackets arguably, Rose Matafeo, who is going to be performing and reading to us some of her war stories that she wrote when she was 9 years old somehow, and then playing us out with an extremely spooky Halloween tale. So if you can handle it, it's a great one. It is my absolute honour and privilege to introduce the multi-talented, prestigious award-winning voice of millennials. Not my words. Certainly not my words.
Not my words. Not my president.
Rose Matafeo.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How do you feel about being the voice of millennials?
It's a huge, huge honour, pleasure and privilege.
But you
thank
are,
you for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Mm-hmm. You are a stand-up comedian.
Yes.
Correct.
I've only recently started admitting to that, but yes, okay, fine.
Yeah, to be fair, it is something to be ashamed of, being a stand-up comedian.
No, not even ashamed of, but like I'm like, oh, it's just a bit of fun, but I've literally done nothing else
really?
Since
so
I
what?
Was a kid.
You were thinking that it was just a bit of just a, like a, not a hobby, but because you were...
Well, yeah, no, but I was like, oh, I'll obviously move on. I don't know, I find it kind of, I think I'm not a real comedian, but you know, that's fine.
What but you do now. You've recently said that you...
I guess so. But I think it's because I've given up a little bit on
everything else.
Yeah. I have to do comedy.
But you do other stuff as well. You act.
I do. I act. I write. I have done lots of other stuff. So I think... But it's just something... There is a cringe factor, I suppose, to being like, yeah, I'm a comedian, man.
Completely agree.
And, do you think?
I think by its very nature, stand-up comedy is just about the most embarrassing thing in the world.
I think it is.
Genuinely, I think it's so embarrassing. That's why I wanted to do a show all about shame.
Yes.
Because by nature of getting up and standing in front of people and saying, trust me, this is going to be great, it's so humiliating. It's awful. It's a dreadful art form and no one should watch it.
Honestly, I think people come at... I agree, fully agree, because I think it's two types of people who come at it are people who are either like incredibly deluded and confident and going, I deserve to be here, or absolute nerds who are like, well, I've got some ideas to share with you today.
Yes.
And it's like, it's and I'm very much the latter.
Right, perfect.
Yeah, I talked to a friend who says that he sees every opportunity to perform as an opportunity to do well, and I say I see it as an opportunity to fail, which is, I think that you can like actually distinguish between comedians as to what your approach is. But
yeah, those are the two types. But that's
yeah,
good because if you're someone who thinks they should share ideas, it's perfect for this podcast.
It is.
Are you excited to talk about where it all began?
I'm very
which
excited.
Which is the ideas you had when you were a little kid.
Yes.
If I had to guess what you were like at school, and
oh,
I do
okay.
because it's the initial format point of this show,
perfect.
I would say that you were relatively bookish and a good, successful student. Mm-hmm. I would say that you were confident and you were sort of unwaveringly into the things you were into, and it didn't matter if people criticised them or it wasn't the consensus at school. I would say you had a close-knit group of friends, some of whom you're still in touch with. Am I correct?
Oh, my God. Actually, like, weirdly spot on. Yes.
For all of it?
Well, I would say bookish, relatively bookish. I was very much... I had a really good close-knit group of friends who... really ultimately massive nerds. So yeah, I think I escaped a bit of the bullying you would get usually with the nerdy things that I was into. I had really two nerdy older brothers, so I think I was able to be a massive nerd. Also, lack of parental supervision, so just amongst my whole childhood. So I think I was free to do a lot of things and explore
Why
a lot of
things. Why is that? Because your parents are just really chilled out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, great.
Yeah, who can be bothered?
You know? Oh, right.
And I was the youngest and stuff. But no, that's pretty right. I think I was confident, but in a way that... hopefully it wasn't annoying, because I think I find confident children really annoying.
Terrifying,
sometimes.
Absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying, and yeah. just get real. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and as a pair of current confident children, we should really be.
But I think there's a charm to people, to kids who are really into something. And that lack of self-awareness of what is cool and uncool, and I think I was never preoccupied with trying to, I think, fit in or be
popular.
Yeah,
you weren't pandering to what?
Yeah,
everyone else was just going, oh, we're really into this. And you were going, God, I better pretend I'm into that then.
Yeah, I think I missed that. I've got insecurities in many other ways, but yeah. I think the coolness aspect, I was never insecure about that.
So did the freedom that your parents gave you, did that make you, do you think, a more creative child? Like more willing and, well, up for expressing yourself?
I think I was only really a creative child. I feel like I was, academically fine, moderate to good, but creativity was... sort of my vibe, because I think I was the only girl in my family, and so I think I was the only girl. Who knows? I think it was because of that I kind of would do these little creative projects, and yeah, I was pretty creative.
And were you like performing these things? So if you would stuff, were you showing it to people?
Yeah, I mean, I was the person who would be a school equivalent of a prefect when I was 12 years old at school, and then would run talent competitions, which I would then enter and win.
Yes.
It is shocking. Like, I would organise the prizes in which I would then go on to win. I remember when I was about 12 as well, I made a group of my friends learn like 7 sketches, Monty Python sketches, which I found on the internet and printed out and got them all to learn and then perform in front of our English class.
Oh my God. Oh my God. When you were setting up these talent shows, were they judged by independent reviewers?
They were independent.
So it wasn't rigged, like you said. It's 100 quid to enter, and all the money goes into the prize fund for top prize. There's nothing for second. And my parents are the judges.
I think it was some of the teachers, but I mean, already though, like to be the organizers of it and then to win it, that's rigged. That's horrific. But we did do an incredible lip sync to beat it. So, which, you know, can't do now.
Yeah. Wow. And what can you remember what the prizes were?
Yeah, it was a prize for a $50 voucher to a bakery. Called Rocket Kitchen. Got a good old big cake from there.
One thing I wanted to ask everyone who comes on this is that were you being creative as a kid as a means of survival? Like a lot of comedians say they became funny at school because they were a loser and they needed to not get bullied by being funny.
Yeah.
But from what you said, I would say no.
No, I don't think so. No, because I think it's kind of a silly... mythology when some comedians create about themselves, where it's like, yeah, my dad was messed up, all your dads need to be messed up to be a comedian, or like, yeah, that thing of being the class clown or whatever.
But they had me by the collar up against a wall, and they were about to murder me, and then I said a choice quip about Margaret Thatcher, and the rest was history.
Exactly. Like, I think sometimes it just comes out of being a little nerd and being like, yeah, I think I just gravitated towards being funny. I was a comedy fan since I was a kid, I think. That was that, like, I loved comedy and I did love stand-up and stuff. So I think, and if you, you know...
Who were you into at the time? Can you remember?
I was massively into Steve Martin when I was about 16.
Right.
I read Born Standing Up and Jerry Seinfeld Sign Language, the book I would get out from the library quite a lot. I was massively into like British sketch shows and all of that, and like
Monty Python,
and yeah, The Office and stuff.
How old were you when you decided you wanted to do stand up then? Was it like, I'm 15, I want to do stand up and I'm doing it today?
Well, honestly, it was the only thing. I was a control freak as well, so it was the only thing as a teenager that gives you the agency to be like, I'm going to write, direct and star in this little sketch that I'm going to do in front of these people. So I think it was just a combination of all of the things that, you know, I think a nerd who has any creative, you know, interest in creative things. It was a perfect outlet for that. But yeah, but I know I never decided like, oh, Bill Hicks, little tiny
yeah,
Bill Hicks.
Yeah, I've got to tell some people some home truths because I'm 15.
Exactly.
And they don't know what it's like.
And also I think it's different for girls as well. Like I went to an all-girls school and I think being funny, you had more of an opportunity at an all-girls school to be yourself and be funny, and you had no pressure of impressing boys in that way. And I think a lot of the time when I was a teenager, sometimes teenage girls, you make yourself a bit smaller because you don't want to detract from whatever teenage boys making a stupid joke about something or other. So that was probably the most thing that helped me do comedy when I was a teenager, is that I had no one to impressed so they would kiss me, and I did not get any of that. You know, so
really not the people in the crowd at the comedy club.
Weirdly, no, I had braces. It would have been pretty dodgy
going to an old girls school when they're like, it's not really the same one-upmanship atmosphere.
Yeah,
maybe that's not true. That's what I would anticipate.
I'd agree. Comedy wasn't used as a competitive kind of, you know,
that must
thing,
have made you stand out quite a lot, right? If you were the presumably you were the only one doing comedy.
I was the only one doing stand-up, yeah, but I think surrounded by so many funny girls, and I think and also I think it was the only reason I got to be head girl, because I was confident in speaking in front of people and around adults and stuff. I was a bit of a tiny adult, which I do hate. I really hate, because I hate tiny adults.
Yeah.
They can be so boring.
Yeah.
It's like that 17-year-old who like is into wine and you're like, are you kidding me? You know about wine, you're 17. Okay, right.
Having too many long conversations with their mum in front of your mum.
Totally. Yes. Oh, I was the total nerd who would be friends with the mum at a birthday party and helping out and stuff, because mostly the person who invited me did not like me. But I was a pity invite a lot
proxy.
Of the time.
Yeah. Did you have to do a speech to be head girl?
No, I just got chosen. But I would do...
You got headhunted.
I got headhunted.
You got headhunted from the comedy
club. You didn't have to campaign.
Oh, we had to campaign and do posters and stuff like that.
No, we didn't do that.
So you would have loved that. You'd have been perfect for this. Yeah. I mean, you won it without even doing that, which was your main strength, because you were comfortable being funny in front of people.
That's true.
You could have done the worm chocolate routine.
Honestly, I just don't... But it's weird answering these questions, because I it's hard to locate what makes you do it. Like, usually there's usually a clear kind of thing. It's like, oh yeah, exactly what you said, like surviving like with like school bullies, or like, you know, impressing your dad or something. But I just have no idea why. That's probably why I'm so uncomfortable with calling myself a comedian now.
Well, I think we are both from that generation of I just wanted to.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I did.
Yeah.
It's like any sort of angst I've put on the reason I became a comedian has massively been put in post in my mind.
Perhaps it's because we had the opportunity to see comedy, a lot more comedy than people who, you know, are older than us, right? Yeah. When they just had to kind of, they were a bit in the dark about it, or we had obsessed with like favourite comedians and stuff, and like we're big comedy fans.
I don't know if this is a leap, but I think creativity was encouraged to our generation a lot more than previous generations.
Totally.
The idea of expressing yourself was like a big thing.
Totally, which is maybe the biggest mistake of the baby generation. Yeah. Encouraging creativity in the
And now when they complain about it, it's like, you did this.
Exactly.
It's your fault.
When
you were younger, I understand what you have brought today is from when you were a bit younger than being a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were...
I've got two books from when I was about seven and nine.
Right.
Which are these books that I'm from New Zealand, but weirdly these have travelled with me all the way to London where I live now.
I'm amazed that you actually have the books.
Yeah,
I was expecting
wild.
Like a printout from a hard drive.
No, I keep a hold of a lot of things. These are very special to me. But what's great is that in this one, I have a blow-by-blow, two stories, blow-by-blow, the first one, of when I was 7 years old and my nan and my mum went to Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me, in cinemas in 1999, which was the best day of my life. It was my favourite film at the time. But yeah, no, I had, so I had like a blow-by-blow of like, I mean, I won't, this isn't my best stuff, but yeah, so this is the story of Austin Powers. Austin Powers is truly attractive and all the girls like him. He was frozen in the 60s by Dr. Evil, his enemy. Dr. Evil is planning to get his mojo. Dr. Evil has a teammate, Mini-Me. Dr. Evil is also planning to blow up Washington, D.C. with laser on the moon. But Austin Powers saves the day again. I think that Austin Powers 2 is the best comedy I've seen this year, in brackets, 1999. That's all I remember about the movie. I'm really surprised the teacher didn't report me, talk
so
to
you,
my...
So you showed this to a teacher? So
this
what was
my, this? This is my teacher. This is my school book.
Oh, right. And what was the task?
No task, really.
Just write something about, in this book.
Talk about stuff that you've done.
And you've gone with teammate, have you, for Mini-Me?
Teammate.
You've gone with teammate.
Teammate. She did like my story about, like, you know, when I went to Austin Powers. But that was when I was about 7. But it wasn't until I was about 9 I got into, I think, full kind of narrative, kind of like, and okay. a bit deep.
And you were what? You were 9 and you wrote stories.
I wrote a bit more stories.
Properly narrative stories. Just looking at that book as soon as you open it,
yeah.
Your handwriting has got a lot smaller.
Yes, it has.
And then very necessarily so, because the handwriting when you were 7 was absolutely enormous.
Are you kidding me?
The books you must have got through. I mean, you're leaving big gaps between these lines.
Oh, come on.
There's a lot
of
heart.
I was a creative person.
And classic 7-year-old, a lot of 3D. Oh, there's Pikachu. And Charizard, Charmander. Yep.
But then I had a real bitch of a teacher who said, who just kept like writing notes, like, don't use this line. And please neaten your work. Really hated me. She was,
You've done like chapter 2, and in between the word chapter and 2, there's a Pokeball and it's on every page.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, wow.
What do you want to hear from
You got some options?
I've got some options. I've got a couple of options. So I've got a, I'm going to give you a couple. So the first one is a story called Freedom. It's the number one, it's the first story. In the brainstorm for this, freedom is being happy, being free, having fun, being yourself.
Okay.
So here it is. This is Monday the 12th of February, I guess, when I was 9, so that was 2001. Oh, also, I do have an account of September 11th.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What a tease. What a way to set that up.
I can't read it. It's too dark. But I found it last night.
I need to see it. I need to hear it off air. But I'm more than happy for this to stay in so that people can just know.
Oh, you know. No, like, because it happened. Like, they wheeled out the televisions and showed us. Yeah. I remember the day. It was crazy. Okay, anyway, this is Freedom. Once upon a time, there was a man who said, I want to be free. Free as a bird. He called up his boss and said, I'm not coming into work today. But maybe tomorrow. Such a nerd.
The freedom of one sick day.
Such a nerd. Still like trying to follow the rules. But he flushed his bank card down the toilet and threw his clothes out the window and went to the beach. He drove on the wrong side of the road. He pranced along the waterfront and helped himself to a pie at the deli. He said, I think everyone should be free, as he tossed his pie bag in the air. And then it goes into a
littering.
No, it's terrible. Then it goes into kind of like a changes into the author speaking. I think he should have a right to be free. He can do what he wants, only if he doesn't offend people or destroy public property. I also think that people could want to be free in other ways. Someone might want to stay inside and read a book. That is their freedom. Someone might want to run in the flowers. That's their freedom. And that's what I think is freedom.
Wow.
So that's a bit of a, and then my teacher said, good thinking on that one.
Not a lot of 9-year-olds using phrases like public property. Also, running through the flowers, that's a damaging public property, arguably.
I know, but
what a hypocrite this author is.
What a nerd it was, I was, to be like, you know, you're concerned about damage of public property when I was 9.
Can you go back to the bit where you describe his phones up work?
Phones up
the
work.
Man, name who shall remain nameless, phones at work and says, I'm not coming in today, maybe tomorrow.
But maybe tomorrow.
Not 100%, maybe tomorrow.
Not 100%.
See how I feel. And then he gets rid of his clothes out of the window.
No, he throws his bank card, flushes his bank card down the toilet.
Bank card down the toilet. So what's the freedom there? The freedom to not be able to buy...
Well, no, he's saying an FU to the banks.
The whole system, capitalism.
The whole system, capitalism.
Oh, he's an anti-capitalist,
anti-capitalist.
He doesn't want to go to work, so he's getting rid of his money.
But he's bougie enough to buy a pie at a deli.
But he's getting a pie at a deli,
he's getting a pie at a deli.
And he's throwing the bag
What a bougie kid I was to...
This is pretty hip. This is some pretty hip freedom. I like it.
So I want to... But, I mean, I feel like I... You know how they're obsessed with the war when you're a kid, like teaching you about the war?
That's such a funny way of saying teaching you about them. Before you clarify that, you know how they're obsessed with the war when you're a kid? It's like, do I?
Who are they talking about?
Yeah, English in particular is like pretty war poetry heavy. It's a lot of war literature, and that's why everyone thinks poetry is shit.
Totally. So obviously they got us to do some like point of view, you know, bits of
imagine
narrative.
You're in the war.
Imagine you're in the war.
Which war?
World War One.
Oh, World War One. Oh, right. Wow. Yeah,
World War One. So. Harder. I don't know what to read here because this one of these makes me seem bad, but it wasn't my fault.
Oh, it absolutely doesn't matter that it makes you seem bad.
No, but
you're nine years old.
It's not racially okay. it's not racially okay. But no, it's not. It's something I could defend in terms of in New Zealand for some reason for World War One. You can cut this out if you want, but they'd always refer to the Turks.
Oh, right.
As in Turkish people. And it always felt really weird. But they still do it in, like, war memorial museums in New Zealand. So I find this, I feel like it's fine.
Look, I can't speak for all the Turks, but I'm fine with it.
Yes. Okay, so I'll do this one. This is a letter home to my family, imagining myself as a guy, Tom. Dear fam, Friday 3rd, February 1915. Dear family, I am so angry that the Turks blew up one of our boats. I mean, it's just horrible. And worst of all, my best mate was on there, Mum. My best friend. I just can't believe it. It's just so horrible. I could just burst out with flames. I'm all right now, but it's just horrible. But it's going to be all right. I'm going to come home and eat some of your delicious blueberry muffins. Mm. Well, bye for now. Love you very much. From Tom. The next one is a very...
Sorry, no, you can't go to the next one just
come
yet.
On.
There's stuff to talk about. Number one, the classic impersonal opening of a war letter. Dear family. Not even dear my family. Whichever family this ends up with.
In general.
Big fan of putting... I mean, was written down?
Yeah.
How many M's?
Five.
I think you represented five. So the journey of that is, I am furious. I'm furious that our boat was blown up.
Yeah.
It had my best mate on it, and it's made Mum, my best mate was on it, and I'm really angry. I could burst into flames.
I could burst out with flames.
Is that, I assumed that was some sort of expression from New Zealand.
I don't know. It's wrong expression. It was
right,
being silly.
Not like Turks.
Just, it's so funny because it's really emotional. It's like, I mean, it's just horrible. And worst of all, my best mate was on their mum. My best friend!
Yeah.
Exclamation mark.
This is someone who was allowed to watch a lot of films when they were a kid. Because that is like proper film dialogue. This is war film dialogue.
It is.
You don't understand.
Don't understand, man.
Incredible. And then it ends with, but on the plus side, blueberry muffins. There's a lot of bakeries and like baked goods involved in a lot of stuff as a kid.
I have no idea.
Bakery is a prize. You got a pie in the last story.
Oh, God, yeah.
Blueberry muffins in this one. I bought you a donut today.
I'm hugely into bakery. I mean, yeah, and also, like, I also have eaten sandwiches for every meal today. So, yeah. This is the same vein. Okay, I love this one. This is more of like a poetic one. I hear the sounds of gunshots all around me. I smell the smoke from the deadly bombs. I taste the bitter taste of blood and death. I hear the horrible screams of the soldiers. I smell the pongy smell from dead men. I taste the smoke from the raging fire within me and burns me until I am nothing but ashes. For all of these soldiers, dead or alive, have died with war in their hearts. My name is Vic. I was in the World War One. I'm so fired up because nobody said anything or took the blame. So I think when I die, that I have done something good for our nation. That's a poem.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's a monologue. The World War One.
The World War
I was in the World War
The World War One. It's like you started writing it and then forgot. Oh, there's been another one.
Oh, there's going to be another one.
The World War One, number one.
It's just like, it's so dramatic,
I really like when you said deadly bombs.
Deadly bombs.
Deadly bombs. It's a very good adjective to put there. The taste of blood being bitter. Very enjoyable. Pongy, not a word you necessarily expect in a story like that.
I know.
Pretty lighthearted word. Pongy.
Pongy.
Oh, those dead bodies whiff a bit. Anyone got any Febreze because of the... the pong of dead men.
But
and then you changed it halfway through. There's quite a dramatic shift halfway through where you're describing actual things that exist in a war. And then you trick us by saying, I can taste the smoke of the fire. And you go, well, there would be fire. There's been bombs within me.
Let's beat poetry,
me.
Baby. Let's
oh,
beat
my
poetry.
God. What a twist.
It's such
I love
a twist.
It.
It's so like, it's just embarrassing thinking of a 9-year-old writing these words down, right? Like, and what are teachers thinking, encouraging this behaviour?
Now that I've heard them,
yeah,
I think you have changed the age, and I think you wrote this when you were 14. You're
absolutely
telling us. I swear I was only 9.
I was 100% 9. Okay. Kelly was my... No. And but you might see in my shows coming up, but you know, that's when I was 9. So there's a lot of war stuff. But yeah, I don't know how much time we have, but I think I want to go... so there's also...
Is there anyone in particular that you would be most keen to perform...
Not
necessarily
one.
Yet. We'll talk about it, but perform for the ending. Is there
Can
any
I do
one
a scary
in particular?
One?
That, yeah, absolutely.
There's a scary one. It's not really good one, but so I'll save that one, the scary one. Here's a short one. Books can't explain everything about nature, you know?
Does it say you know? Does it say you know?
You know? I wrote stories like stand-up, honestly.
Yeah.
A lot of it is like weird observational stuff. It's very strange.
Books can't explain everything about nature, you know? Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, no.
Had someone told you that books can explain everything about nature?
No one. I'm talking about the man. The man's trying to get me down with these books about nature. They can't explain the soft, cool wind blowing gently upon your face. Neither the radiant sun shining down on you, or even the feeling of the water growing up your legs like grapevines. Not even the gentle sound of squirrels playing happily. No squirrels in New Zealand.
Is that true? That's a fact.
That's a fact. There's no squirrels in New Zealand. So you can't fully trust books about nature because it only takes a couple of sentences to prove them wrong.
Oh my God, I love that. Wow. That's electrifying. I've got goosebumps. That ending.
Yeah.
So you can't fully trust. I mean, what a weird. It is a premise that you invented as a 9-year-old. So you're arguing against something that no one has ever claimed. But the fact that there's the lack of trust, you feel betrayed by books because they've tried, how dare they, to expose everything there is to know about nature. And you go, yeah, what about the sea growing up my legs, water growing up my legs? Is that what it was?
To be fair, yeah. Or
like grapevines.
To be fair, my dad is a conspiracy theorist. So I think I got that from him.
Oh, so
him,
not trusting
probably.
Books.
Yeah, I'm just going to show you a preview of that's the 9/11 story. I mean, it's an accurate portrayal.
I mean, it is just it's like a you wrote the
it's
news.
Like Wikipedia.
You wrote the news
it's like a news copy
for it.
Of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But
it's just
so
your
weird.
News copy. But that would have been I remember that. That would have been a school task of like, look, obviously this horrible thing happened. We all have to learn about it. Write it down and then you just describe.
Exactly.
Well, this incomprehensible. Yeah, yeah.
It's but it's a very it's very strange actually to have it in a children's.
I'm a huge fan of the. My favorite one is the. But you can't trust books.
Can't trust books. I like
about
can't
nature
trust books.
As well.
Yeah. What was I trying to? Because also I'd write in a real conversational
just a few
tone.
Few sentences can prove. I love that squirrels is an example. So where would you have got that from? Just watching stuff.
Films. Yeah.
Squirrels in films.
All those squirrels in films. You know. I mean, a
just watching
in
Ice Age 1 and 2. Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, I now have to grade it.
Okay.
I have to. It's pretty tough to grade these things. I mean. Mm-hmm. The first category is originality.
Okay.
There's quite a lot of different things in there, so it's quite a war, a heavy war vibe. It was for war literature.
Yes.
It's pretty original, I've got to say.
Yeah.
I've not heard a lot of stuff like that. You don't hear Pong coming up in war-based literature a lot.
Not a very popular
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 for originality.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a lot of original thoughts as well. Like, I'm you know.
Yeah. You were definitely exhibiting...
Early.
A sort of ego of someone who was like, oh, no, I think I know what's going on here.
I was a truth teller.
I know. Yeah, exactly. You were a certified truther at age 9. The next rating is pure teen horniness. Now, given that this is pre-teen and you're 9, I don't feel comfortable using this one.
Well, I mean, I had Austin Powers.
You did have some Austin Powers-based stuff. You didn't really touch on any of the...
My horniness to... No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I would. This is a school book.
Although
once that...
But the fact that you were into Austin Powers, end of the James Bond thing, how old were you then?
Probably 8 or something. When I was on the school mat one day and I just seen Austin Powers, I quoted the quote about Robin spits and he swallows. What is it, baby, spits or swallows? in front of my teacher. My teacher nearly hit me.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
Didn't just go, oh, it's just an innocent kid not knowing what they're saying.
Well, she's like, yeah, but she's just like, but I didn't know what I was saying.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
A 7-year-old saying spits or swallows.
Yeah, you what could that possibly
what
mean?
What the hell am I doing? Yeah. What? That's horrible. I would have kicked me out right
now. Well, it definitely represents a sort of an angst and horniness on the way.
Okay.
I'll give it a 3. I'll go 3
thank
for
you.
That. But only because I'm uncomfortable. and the final category is the Mickey Mouse Club score / Ryan Gosling Ryan Goose score, which is how much does it show the potential of what you became, have become, and now are, this future star that you now are. So I would say, certainly there is a line of very original thinking in... Don't trust books because squirrels.
Yeah.
And there's an element of like how... It's like almost... how do I explain this? without being extremely hurtful.
Make eye contact. Make eye contact. Direct eye contact with me when you say it.
Stylistically.
Yeah.
They're
go on.
I can see aspects. I can see...
I think I'm almost identical to what I... As a,
stand-up,
as a writer.
A lot of good stand-up... is going, look, you never thought of this like this before, have you?
Well, exactly. Who writes You Know?
So the book one in particular is you going, yeah? Oh, you think you know about books, do you? Well, guess what? Here, actually, is a great opinion that's also funny because it's got funny stuff in it.
Sure.
And the sort of example of a squirrel, it might be the sort of example you'd say now.
Yeah, it possesses the same energy and attitude, I think, as stand-up, which is, hey... Listen to me talk about something that no one has asked me to talk about.
Yeah.
There's that confidence, right? Of like, stand-up is just essentially that. Like, no one cares.
Yeah.
Why are you saying this?
And,
but you trick people into thinking that it's...
But important. Stand-up, good stand-up is listen to me talk about someone no one's asked me to talk about, but also no one else is talking about.
True.
And therefore I'm showing something original. And that is what that thing is, because I don't imagine there was a task where it was like, prove books are incorrect. This is school. Welcome to school. I want you to write something in a book about why books are wrong, particularly about nature. So I think that's pretty...
Okay.
I'm going to give you a pretty high Ryan Goose score there.
Lovely.
You can have a full 5. You can have the full 5 for that one.
Oh, my God.
Which, what's the title? What did I give again?
You did a 4 and a 3 and 5?
12.
So 12?
Yeah. 12. 12 out of 15.
Wow. Thank you
That's
so
the
much.
Absolute top of the leaderboard.
That's amazing. Is the top, is the only on the leaderboard?
It's the only one on the leaderboard.
I'd be on the top magnet on the Top Gear.
yeah, exactly. And this show is exactly like Top Gear.
Yeah, that's the only reason I did it. You said it was like
vibe.
The podcast of, like, Top Gear podcast.
It's Top Gear podcast, yeah. I will now level the playing field. I'll read an embarrassing piece that I wrote, and I was a little
so
bit older
excited.
Than you
okay.
were in your one. And this is a poem, it's called Eden. And the whole time I'm saying it, I want you to bear in mind that I read this aloud voluntarily to my drama class at GCSE. Okay. It was not the homework that was set. Time is reaching out to me. Through roots it branches, with hands it dances, and hence it passes in this garden of infidelity. My life is trees surrounding me, a blanket of eternity, a complexity which expects me to see my flaw fatally. My path was green and suddenly it turned and greyed and dulled and paid the price for my disease. My greed eventually conceded and hence this fated lead proceeded and sure, this was once exactly what I needed. I took my chance and seemingly succeeded, my conscience's advice not heeded. Yet here I sit, and Eve in this Eden, yet I can only dream I might be dreaming. As my mind wanders eager and is seen stealing a moment, I'm banished to watch my conscience bleeding. Yet if only I'd let my garden grow, my trees' leaves blossom and Adam know, perhaps these blades of grass might not pierce my brain every time it asks and the response is, well, I told you so. Any guesses as to what that means? Because I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea what any of it refers to.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. What is it? 16 as well.
16!
So I looked exactly like you're looking now. I looked, and
honestly, can I just say, I would have been in love with you as a teenager. I would have been like, you would have been my absolute crush because that is the worst thing I've ever
It's a
heard.
Shame you weren't around because everyone else thought I was a fucking loser.
No, but this is my problem. You know, I think that was why it was good going all girls school to save me from... nerd boys like you yourself taking advantage. That was incredible.
It's really embarrassing. The thing about...
No, it's not. Let's be honest. No, it's not. It's wonderful.
There's a line in it that was like particularly... I'm trying to find it. That was particularly unacceptable.
Eve? You said you're the Eve of the Eden.
Yeah.
Very progressive.
It would have just been, I learnt alliteration this week. My conscience's advice not heeded. I mean, what is that?
Can I see it?
Yeah.
Can I see it? Can I show you? Can I try and see what my favourite bits are? Oh, I love this one. My path was green and suddenly it turned and greyed and dulled and paid the price for my disease.
Disease is greed.
The disease is greed. Yeah, my greed eventually conceded.
Much like you, it was an anti-capitalist message. I was chucking my bank card down the toilet. It's just that I was about 10 years older than you.
Oh my God. Yet I can only dream I might be dreaming that's unacceptable.
I can only dream I might be dreaming.
What does that mean? I can only dream I might be dreaming.
And that's exactly the sort of thing I would have written at that age and gone, I'm a genius. One is as good as me. I'm the best. This is incredible. And I read that aloud to my drama class. And I literally remember the moment where I said, oh, mine's like, he was like, everyone just read these stream of consciousness. None of you understand this play enough that we're about to perform. Write a stream of consciousness. It had nothing to do with Genesis, this story, Adam and Eve. It had nothing to do with that. And I just wrote this. And I remember the moment where I was like, I've actually kind of written this sort of like poem. And the teacher went, yeah, is a poem a stream of consciousness? And I was like, I don't know what any of the words you said meant. So I'm just going to read these words I don't mean as well. And it was like, I was initially reading it in one group and then everyone else just started listening. Oh, and at the time, God. I thought, God, it was so good that it literally silenced the room. And I realised, no, it was so bad that it literally silenced the room.
Did you go to an all-boys school?
No. No, that class, it was a drama class, that would have been more girls than boys.
Yeah.
And I definitely fancied at least three of them.
Of course you would. But dude, were you popular? Were you a nerd?
No, I wasn't a nerd.
In the middle?
I was in the popular group. I was in the group that played football, but I wasn't good at football. I was good
at... Did you have girlfriends at high school?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay.
And I wrote a lot about loneliness. And that continued into university.
That's continued into my stand-up as a 20-year-old.
Okay, cool.
I'm just trying to get a grasp as to who you were at this time.
Sure.
So, did you write poetry out of school?
To be honest, I think this is probably something I just wrote and then I was like, I didn't do the homework. I'll just say this poem.
Right. Were you a good student?
Yeah, not at this age. Yeah, I did all right. But I was having a lot of meetings about you should be getting better grades than you are on these mock exams and stuff. You're not trying. I was in trouble a lot for not trying.
Wow, it's interesting. So you were quite creative though. You've got a romantic spirit as a
I
as
wrote
a teenager.
And I like I would enter short story competitions on the internet and I would draw.
Oh,
I was doing everything I could
so
to try
sweet.
And be like that.
I love
but it's
that.
All so bad. It's all awful.
I did a short story competition as well.
And I just did it online and I'm pretty sure they were pyramid schemes because you had to pay to enter.
Oh yeah. Awful.
And like I never ever heard back. It was never even like confirmation, you have entered. It was just like you have paid $25.
That's so sad.
So out of five, what are you giving that for originality?
Well, because it's based on the old Bible, I would say I give you a three.
Well, bear in mind, I can only dream I could be dreaming. I mean, have you ever heard that before or
no,
since?
No, absolutely fair. A two. No, I'm just kidding.
It doesn't deserve it. I don't know.
I'd give it a four.
Okay.
I'd give it a four.
Pure teen horniness?
Pure teen horniness. I don't think it is as horny as it could have been.
No.
I think, as I said, I would have been like, wow, this is an amazing person. But I think that lies more as a reflection of my standards as a teenager. which are very strange. So I'd say it doesn't, it elicits maybe horniness, but it doesn't kind of, it doesn't, it's not outwardly horny.
Yeah.
So I give that a two, I'm sorry.
Sure. Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose.
Well, you don't do this kind of stuff in your stand-up as much.
But you did for a bit. When I was first doing long shows, I was doing like bits of spoken word in the shows. And
I feel like I've seen you do your letters as well.
Yeah. And that was a poem. And I'm sure in 4 to 5 years' time, I will look back on those on a podcast and go, and I charged people to see this.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to think of the spirit of it is still in your writing. I give you a four because I have seen you do your letter, and I honestly think in 2 years' time I will see that at a preview of yours when you're desperate.
Oh, I have definitely read these old poems on stage and been like, God, wasn't I a loser? And people are just like, this is too much.
This is
I can't handle how embarrassing you are. It's not funny. It's just horrible to be near.
Yeah.
So what?
That was a 4-2 and a 4.
Great, 4-4-2, classic. So, a 10.
A 10.
12-10. Rose, you've won. You've won,
won
the episode.
But I've won the episode.
Don't get too excited. We're both losers. That's the whole point of this.
Oh, that's so nice.
I believe you have one more story.
Okay, one more story.
That you
okay.
can play us out with, and I will not interrupt.
Okay.
And that we will add in some... kind of sound effects, some kind of music, whatever you tell us you want.
It's a spooky one.
It's spooky, so you want scary stuff.
It's quite spooky for a 9-year-old. So this is actually, this is a Halloween story. It's written on Halloween, Wednesday the 31st of October.
Oh, wow.
Do
we need to do a trigger warning for anyone listening because of how spooky it is?
Trigger warning of spooky.
Okay.
Trigger warning spooky, trigger warning murder, trigger warning. But I just want to, preface this with that. It was when I was about 9, or around this age, I dressed up as Eric Draven from The Crow, Brandon Lee, to go trick-or-treating on my friends who had no idea who that was.
Yeah.
And I think I got diarrhea that night.
Spooky. The spirit's exiting your body.
That's how much of a nerd I was. I was super, I cried. I remember when I found out Brandon Lee died, I went and cried on a beach for a while. I went about 10. RIP though.
But you'd like chuck your clothes out the window, put your bank card in the toilet, exactly. And you phoned in sick to work because you had diarrhea.
Maybe tomorrow.
Straight
maybe
to the
tomorrow,
beach.
Guys. Okay, so this one is called is a Spooky Story, Wednesday, 31st of October.
It's called Spooky Story.
No, it's called, it's called Maniac Attack.
Oh, yes, Maniac Attack. Here
so
we
it
go.
It starts, interesting. So is it starts with dialogue. So. No, no, please don't hurt me. Ah! We were watching the most scary movie. It was called Slice and Dice. But then I need to write, it was called Slice and Dice, and then later on I added at the end of Slice and Dice, baby.
That's a pretty good joke. That's a good joke.
We were watching the most scary movie. It was called Slice and Dice, baby. Then suddenly we heard, kids, time to go trick-or-treating, shouted Mum. It was Halloween night, and it was pitch black outside. I was with my friends, Lani, India, Sasha, and of course me, Rose. Do we have to go? Stuttered Lani. Oh, come on. Don't be a baby, Lani, said India. There's nothing out there, is there? Just come on. We're going to be late now. Get up and let's get moving. We were outside in the dark, where it was really freaky. We were happily trick-or-treating. When Sasha saw a man standing in the middle of the road, all by himself, we went up to him and all said, hello, what a fantastic costume. Where did you get it? He didn't say anything. Who are you anyway? Said India and pointed the torch up to his face and saw a smiling man with scars and cuts across his face. Then we ran like hell and tried to find a hiding place. Then he said, I'm coming for you girls so you can run, but you can't hide, shouted the maniac. We were knocking on every door in the neighborhood, but no one seemed to be home. I'm sure that lots of people were home when we were trick-or-treating, said India. Then they found an old costume shop and hid in there. Everybody was looking around and suddenly saw him standing right in front of us. We ran and ran and we ran back to my house and the door was unlocked. We ran inside and found a pool of blood surrounding my family. I was crying so much. And then I heard footsteps. I was so scared. The maniac came and came right up to my... The maniac came and came right up to me. Jesus. He had a knife in his hand and I closed my eyes and then I opened them again. It was all just a dream. I reassured myself that it wasn't real. But when I looked out of the window and saw him in the window and that was the end of me, then he whispered in my ear, slice and dice.
Unbelievable.
So I think it makes me cry because it's, oh my God, slice and dice, baby, makes me cry so much.
That is exceptional. Thank you so much. I just want to say Jesus one Christ. Thing about it, which is in the moment so where you say you closed your eyes, you opened them again and it was all a dream and then it wasn't a dream. I can only dream I might be dreaming. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry I
have a dad in it. I can only dream I'm ever dreaming.
That's the whole message of your story.
Oh my God.
Rose, thank you so much for coming on and doing this show. It's been an absolute treat.
It's been a treat as well.
That is some of the best writing I've ever heard in my life.
Keep writing your poetry.
I can't wait to see Slice and Dice Baby released in theatres.
Slice and Dice.
And that's what you're here to plug. So,
yeah, Slice and Dice Baby's coming out on October 31st.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
So there it was, Rose Matafeo's early work. What an incredible episode. She is absolutely amazing. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Give us a review if you enjoyed it. Do not give us a review if you did not enjoy it, please. If you didn't enjoy it, send your feedback directly to @RoseMatafeo. If you like Rose, she just said to Google her because I don't know if she has a website. But, you know, if you've ever listened to a podcast before, they're quite heavily advertising Squarespace. So, Rose, if you're listening back, get on Squarespace. Get yourself a website. Also, I am on tour. I do have a website and I built it with Squarespace. RhysJames.co.uk. All the dates are on there and I imagine there are tickets available for every single one. So thanks for listening and I'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.